Ashes to ashes, funk to funky. We know Major Tom's a junkie, strung out in heaven's high, hitting in all. This is not. That is not how that song goes. Oh, we're live. Hello. Oh, look at that. We got the live chat with the host feed. Pulled it off. Look at this professional YouTuber. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Comic Book Herald Live. I'm Dave Busing, founder and editor-in-chief of comicbookherald.com. What you just maybe heard was an attempted Bowie's Ashes to Ashes. I don't know that one that well. As you could tell, I went into the recording and I thought, oh, geez, I don't have a song. I haven't thought of a song today. What's a song with the word ash in it? And the first thing that came to mind was Bowie. It's a little Flight of the Conchords, Bowie. I can do that. I can do some Bowie, but I definitely can't do Ashes to Ashes. You're going to see your own chats here in the comment. We got the live chat streaming. If you're here with us, thanks for joining live. Very much appreciate it. You can find all my stuff at comicbookherald.com. You can back the show over at patreon.com/comicbookherald. Get in your questions. Get in your thoughts. Super chat is open and available for those of you interested in supporting the show. But otherwise, I am just going to review. Ooh, Dave Bowie sing. I like it. A little stretch, a little play on Dave Busing. Dig it. Okay. Let's do this. Let's talk comics. We were going to talk today pretty much primarily, like, what are the new comics that are out? Got a little Immortal Thor today. Immortal Thor number 8. Got Ultimate Black Panther number 2. I was going to do some February, best of February comics, baby, right? But hey, we got the X-Men From the Ashes announcement. We got the big announcement. Just came down this afternoon. Marvel announced at South by Southwest the first three titles and creative teams, and then a handful of other titles that are going to be the post-Krakoa X-Men comics. Quick pause here. Very important question just came in. Is DeMar DeRozan the best Bull since Jordan? Thank you, Trapcott Thanos, for that all-timer of a question. We're going to have to come back to that one. Sadly, honestly, it's hard to be the best Bull since Jordan when you're not even the best player on your team, which is obviously Alex Caruso, right? Jordan passed the torch directly from his hand to Caruso, but otherwise, yes, I do love me some DeMar DeRozan. I can't get off this Bulls team. It's a lot. It is a lot. Listen, I know some of you get mad when I talk sports. It is a lot like X-Men fandom. Sports fandom and X-Men fandom are so similar, where in sports fandom, I am very, very, very aware and committed to my teams. I just get that's how the game works, right? I'm a Cubs fan. I'm a Bears fan. I'm a Bulls fan. That has been consistent since I made that decision at the age of like 15. For some people, it goes way back, right? As a kid, I was a very contrarian kid, okay? I would venture to guess I was in the 1% of 9-year-old boys whose aunt got them a welcome to Utah, the Utah Jazz welcome Dave Busing picture up on their wall in the Chicagoland area, okay? Every other kid had a Jordan jersey and a Jordan poster. I had the Utah Jazz welcome Dave Busing, an insane choice by any metric. I was a very contrarian kid. My favorite baseball player as a kid was Pedro Martinez. I can't explain some of these things that I do, the way my brain works. I decided as a teen, I was like, you know what? These are my teams, right? And you just decide and you just have your teams. And it's usually based on where you're from and you have your sports teams. That's how a lot of y'all are with comics and with X-Men fandom in particular. You're just like, I read X-Men. It's like, well, what if it's not good? No, I read X-Men. And it's like, well, what if you don't like, no. If X-Men is to be read, I read X-Men. And I find that as a comics fan, very strange, right? I've talked about how, you know, I am more certainly entering this era. Obviously, I'm an X-Men fan, but I am not a Marvel zombie week to week pick up X-Men comics X-Men fan. This is the only era of my life that I've picked up X-Men comics on a week to week basis and cared to read them and analyze them at that cadence, right? Otherwise, the past, you know, 15 years of collecting comics, I was not ever picking up X-Men. I'd read the stuff, yeah, like in Marvel Unlimited binges after the fact, but I was not reading X-Men at the time. And there will come a day here in the nearest future where that is true again. And that's fine, right? That's just how I operate. I hop in based on interest level. But it's fascinating to me because some of y'all don't get the sports, but then I see the exact same happening with comics, and then somehow I'm confused by that with Spider-Man fandom or X-Men fandom, where they're just like, no, that's just what I do. That's just what I do. And I think some of you are all going to react to this change in this next era of X-Men comics the same way, right? You're just going to be like, on to the next thing. I am an X-Men fan. That's how this goes. It's admirable in its sort of purity and just dedication of fandom. It's definitely not how my brain works when it comes to reading comics. Okay, so we are going to talk about the X-Men From the Ashes announcement that came out for Marvel today. We'll talk about all the comics announced. We'll talk about all the creators announced. We'll talk about what it means. I've been talking for a few weeks now. David Harper over at Sketch and Off Panel, he had me on very graciously to do our Uncanny X-Men fantasy draft. Tell you what, a lot of similarities. A lot of similarities between the names we were bandying about and the names that got announced today. I don't want to say Dave Stinney Strikes Again because I don't have the mug in front of me. But Dave Stinney Strikes Again. Dave Stinney Strikes Again. I think no major surprises. One semi-surprise. I think one decent semi-surprise in the X-Men announcement. But that's what we're going to talk about. So getting your questions, getting your thoughts. We're going to talk about those. Listen, save these sports comments until we get going. Come on, I see Justin Fields chatter in here. I see Best Bull Since Jordan chatter. Yeah, probably is D Rose. Listen, you got to save these till the end when I'm starved for conversation and I have no idea what to talk about. I'll be honest, I don't even know which way I'm going to go on this announcement today. I definitely have not had enough to drink to really just dive in. At some point we might talk Fall of the House of X. I don't know. I mean, good grief. I didn't want to read it. I told you all that. And somehow it was worse than I expected. Okay, let's do it. What are we doing? We're talking about comics. Okay, next image, go. Show me the next image and the next. How about the next? We're going all the way around, baby. All the way around the horn. Okay, From the Ashes, A New Beginning, X-Men by Jen McKay and Ryan Stegman. Exceptional X-Men by Eve Ewing and Carmen Carnero. Dropping an Ewing in there? Dropping an Ewing in there and just like leaving it? What a head fake. What a head fake. That's some George Mike and Up and Under, baby. That is a sick fake out, dropping an Ewing in there. I got a message today. I won't call them out live and say who it was, but I got a message today from somebody who said, Al Ewing's back on X-Men because they had seen this. And listen, I didn't like lose my mind. But I was definitely shocked. I was like, no way. I was completely astonished that anyone from the Krakoa era would like be a part of this. You know, it just feels like, okay, it's going to be a clean cut. It's going to be a clean segue. We're going to talk about Al Ewing because there might be some DC jumping going on there. We got some rumblings of that. But so they dropped the Ewing and I'm hearing Al Ewing's back on X-Men. And I'm like, you know what? Good for Al. Good for Al. He killed it on X-Men Red, killed it on Sword, love him on a Resurrection of Magneto. Like, yeah, let the guy do X-Men, right? Let the guy do X-Men. But no, it's Eve Ewing. It's Eve Ewing and Carmen Carnero, which is its own kind of good. And then we got the Uncanny X-Men by Gail Simone and David Marquez. Marvel has announced as well Phoenix, X-Factor, Storm, Nyx. Talk about that. X-Force and Wolverine are going to be series. They have not yet announced the creatives. I think the surest bet of the bunch there is Greg Capullo doing Wolverine. I'm still, my first pick in the Uncanny X-Men fantasy draft was Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo on Wolverine. Is that going to be there? Is that really what it's going to be? We'll see. We will see. Scott Snyder did retweet support of this lineup, which says to me, Dave Stinney might be onto something yet again. I usually am. Okay, but those are the officials that we have. We got Jed and Ryan Stegman on X-Men. Big picture. The creative announcements, semi-predictable, yes. I didn't expect Eve Ewing and Carmen Carnero on a series. That's got a freshness to it. That's got some youth to it. Okay. It's not just old guard, which is definitely a positive. I have not read Eve's Black Panther yet. I definitely will be checking that out prior to Exceptional X-Men and sort of formulating my expectations. The only viewing stuff I've read is some Ironheart and Champions. A youthful writer. I love that she's from Chicago. Honestly, I give her like when I see her name, I'm like, hell yeah, get yours, because she's Chicago-based. Is that like a real helpful critical evaluation? Yeah, it is. How dare you? How dare you say it's not? I'm seeing here in the chat from Justin, Lisan Al Dave, I can't believe I skipped over this. I can't believe I skipped over this. We'll come back to the comics. I made a video. I made an actual video. It is up on the Comic Book Herald YouTube channel. Have you heard of it? It's not bad. The video, the card says Hickman versus Dune. It is all about the ways that Dune influenced House of X and Powers of 10 and the Hickman X-Men vision. It's something that I actually had cooking about a year and a half ago. And then I saw all the attention around Dune with this movie and, you know, kind of started getting back into it myself. And I was like, you know what? We're doing this. We're going to do it. And I did. And I made an actual video. You can watch it. Can you believe this? You can watch it for free on YouTube. What a deal. What a steals and deals. It's about a 20-minute, unhinged, unedited rant about all the ways that Dune influences House and Powers. It was fun to do. It's going to be, listen, it's going to be another CBH triumph. It's going to be another book or another video that gets, you know, about 3,500 views. And yet each one of those 3,500 people is going to be the coolest MF-er in the world, right? Every one of those 3,500 people, coolest MF-er around. Check that out. That's on the Comic Book Herald YouTube channel. Like, subscribe, comment, all that fun stuff. Always helps out. Comics Guy asks, where can I watch the X-Men draft? You can't watch it. Well, you could, I guess. It'd be boring. It's just a podcast. It's on Off Panel. Off Panel with David Harper. I'll tell you what. You go and listen to that, you're going to hear some predictions that are coming your way. You're going to hear some suggestions for creators that are going to be on comic books that are definitely going to be on them. I think what's happening right now is what David and I were picking for who we thought was going to be working in this era of X-Men is going to be very true, because a lot of that was based on just like who currently works in Marvel, who are they connected to, or who have they kind of teased, right? So like Gail Simone, we've known was going to be involved for some time. The only fake out with Gail was, I think a lot of us, myself included, talked ourselves into like, oh, she's not doing Uncanny X-Men. Like, oh, it's a little bit of a fake out where like, oh, she'll be involved, but like she's not the main. No, like they announced her as the Free Comic Day writer in like December. This has been in the cards for months and months and months. Somehow I talked myself out of it like a fool. That's my biggest regret from the draft. Biggest regret from the draft by far. I could have number one pick said Gail Simone, David Marquez, Uncanny X-Men. Could have locked it in, and Dave Stinney nailed it. Instead, I put him on Generation X like a fool. What a fool I've been. Only a fool would have it. Something like that. Steely Dan, right? Steely Dave? Anyway. So, no, it's a good listen. It was a lot of fun to do. You can listen to that on Off Panel with David Harper. Okay? What were we talking about? Where were we? X-Men Comics. X-Men by Jed McKay and Ryan Stegman. Eve Ewing. Carmen Carnero, Gail Simone, David Marquez. These are all good creators. These are all good creators. I like Jed McKay stuff a lot. I had Jed on, Cree Annotators, friend of Comic Herald, one of my best friends in the industry. And he would not reciprocate. He would never say that back to me. Listen, I have 115 industry friends. Everyone I've ever interviewed, for actually it's probably more than that, because sometimes I did two people at a time. 115 interviews with creators and comics industry folks. They're all my best friends in the industry. None of them would reciprocate that, I don't think, but nonetheless, I'm counting it. Ed Brubaker, great friend of mine, okay? Not a lot of people know this. I like to brag about it. It's fun. Jed McKay, had him on early in Cree Annotators because I like Black Cat so much, because Black Cat was that good. Black Cat had no business being that good. Black Cat was that good. Jemma K made Moon Knight flipping awesome. Now he's stuck on Avengers. Avengers isn't working. But the history of Jemma K says, very good Marvel Comics writer, is second, is the runner-up to Al Ewing in terms of Marvel writers who flipping get how to use continuity. I mean, he's a distant second because Al is like just the absolute Lord and Savior, but pretty good at that. Pretty good at that. I think Jed McKay on X-Men is going to be good. I do. I think Ryan Stegman has done some great Marvel comics. Superior Spider-Man, Dan Slott, Venom, Donnie Cates. I'd be a little surprised if Stegman stayed on X-Men for like more than three issues. But a good launch. That's a good launch partner to have. That book sounds kind of interesting. That book definitely sounds kind of interesting. So the problem here is not, I don't want to talk problems. I don't want to be negative. I got to be a little negative. Fall of House of X number 3 came out this week. But okay, these are all like solid creators. And they're going to make decent to solid comics. They are. What I'm missing still, and maybe this will come, some of it just comes with probably reading the work. But what I'm missing is like, what is the vision? What is the vision of all of this, right? House and Powers, especially getting to the Dawn of X. Forget how the actual House and Powers experience, because that has superstar writer Jonathan Hickman returns, which has like definitely a level of panache and like an attention-grabbing, marketable superstar that this line doesn't have. You know, I like Gail Simone a lot. I don't think her comics work of recent years. I don't. What would you even point to? I think that's a struggle, right? Somebody pointed out to me The Clean Room, which was the Vertigo book that probably got the most attention with John Davis Hunt, which I hadn't read that. I went to read it. Oh man, I'm glad I did, because John Davis Hunt, I'd forgotten how good Davis Hunt was. You know, it gets lost. I think because the next best thing he did was The Wildstorm with Warren Ellis, the canceled Warren Ellis, right? So nobody talks about that book, which was through no fault of Hunt's, even though it's phenomenal work, great on The Clean Room. It's an interesting horror. I'm definitely going to read the rest of it. But like, you know, it's not the same level. It's not the same level. Let's not pretend it is. But anyway, the vision of this going into Dawn of X was like, okay, cool. We've got this foundation. We've got this template. I know what this is. I know why this is unique. You can pretty much put any creator on the books at that point. And I was like, yeah, I want to know. I want to see what they got, right? I wasn't a fan or not a fan of any of the creators who were announced for the Dawn of X. Mostly, I just didn't know their stuff. Jerry Duggan, Teen Howard, Ben Percy. Who else do we have? Brian Edward Hill. Ed Hickman twice. Is that it? Ed Brisson. The only one of those that I had read anything of was Jerry Duggan on a Deadpool run that I was kind of whatever about, but people liked it. So it didn't really matter who was doing the books. And ultimately it does, right? Eventually it does as you get into it. But going into it hype-wise, it was like, I want to be here for this. I want to be here for this. I want to see what this vision is. I want to see it through. That's been a huge part of the thrill of Krakoa. I don't know what that vision is right now for From the Ashes. What we got today was all of these books, there's three X-Men books, which is very funny that there's three X-Men books. They all have the same logo. Technically, we have an appendage. We have an Uncanny and an Exceptional, which if you're going to do Exceptional X-Men, all right, fine. I'll get on my soapbox. All right, pulling up the soapbox. We're going to get here. We're going to put this right in front of the microphone. If you're going to do Exceptional X-Men, use the X. Use the X. What are we doing? We're starting this with an E? We're starting this with E? What is this, the 90s at a club? Get that E out of here. Start that with X. Exceptional X-Men. It's right there. What are we doing? Oh, all right. Moving the soapbox. Getting that out of the way. Okay. So we got our three comics coming out. The vision is we got three X-Men teams. They're all going to be scattered across America. Cyclops team, X-Men, that's going to be in Alaska. Ooh, Alaska. We're going to have one set in Louisiana. down in the bayou. Get some CCR going for that one. And the third one's going to be Kitty in Chicago. Kitty Pride, famous Deerfield's own Catherine Pride. That one's going to be set in Chicago, which, again, EV Wing, Chicago native. Good. Sure. More Chicago stuff. I better see Bulls content. I better see Bears content. I better see Cubs. I want to see the coach. Okay? You want to reveal the coach is a mutant? I could take that. I'll have some sausage. I'll see Ditko revealed as a mutant. We'll watch him. We'll watch, Exceptional X-Men with an X, by the way. Fix that by the time it comes out. What are we doing here? Okay. Seattle KO says maybe there's a reason for the E. Get out of here. What is this, a cult? The reason for the E. That sounds like some religious dogma. You're spitting at me. I promise you, there's no reason for the E. Unless it was EV Ewing was like, I'm double E. This is my book. Give me the triple E. That's a flex I could appreciate. I could appreciate that flex, but I guarantee you that did not happen. There's no way. Okay, so we got three teams all over the world. All over the world. And it just sounds a lot like the Fall of X. Like a lot, right? Mutants are scattered. They're hated and feared more than ever. What else? That's about all we got. Krakoa is no more. How is this any different than the Fall of X? I would love it. I'm genuinely asking. I don't know. So that's to me is like until I have a sense of like, oh, here's a vision. And until I have a sense of here's what these create, here's the connective landscape these creators are going to be playing in. I don't have a lot to get excited about, you know? Again, these are all names I respect. They've all have work that I've enjoyed, but none of them are like, these aren't authors that I just have like a standing pull, right? At the comic shop. And I was thinking about that. I mean, that's a hard list to come up with. There aren't a lot of creators like that. You know, a lot of it's contextual. But there are certain names that when I see, there's a level of surprise or intrigue or freshness where I would be super excited. That's what happened when I saw Peach Momoko announced as doing Ultimate X-Men at New York Comic Con. That was like, that actually got me where I was like, oh, wow, did not see that coming. That was exciting. The potential of that, I think, was really interesting. I don't have that reaction here to anything. That's not a knock. That's just reality, you know? So I think, listen, it's a solid lineup. It's far from a worst case scenario. I mean, I've definitely seen reactions on social of people who are like, you know, people who are going to be upset anyway with Krakoa ending, I think in a lot of instances, but sort of acting like, you know, this is nuclear and the worst thing that could ever happen to X-Men. It's definitely not that. I mean, like, listen, I can name right now scenarios that are way worse and way more regressive. You know what I mean? This ain't John Byrne's X-Men. This ain't Mark Miller's X-Men. Okay? Like, there are way worse scenarios that we could be walking into. This ain't Dan Slott and Greg Land on X-Men. You know? They made a point to be like, it's not the mansion, which I think kind of ignores that, like, the mansion isn't the point. The point is, like, what the mansion stands for. These all sound like mansion books. These are all pretty standard, like, I mean, I said it feels like Fall of X. I mean, you know what it feels like a little bit more is, like, Inhumans versus X-Men territory. That's the sky is falling take on this that I can see, at least, you know? But given the creative talent involved, that feels like a reach. This feels like a little bit of a reach. So I don't know. I'm curious. What do y'all think? Are people super excited? Are you wait and see still? Are you not excited? The other titles that got announced, but with no creatives attached, which I don't know how you react to any of this without knowing who's going to be writing the books or what the thing's going to be about. But, you got Phoenix, you got Wolverine, you got Storm. You got, which good that Storm's getting a book. What was it? X-Force, maybe? X-Factor, one of those. Probably both. And Nyx is the surprise of the bunch. Now, for those of you who are like not true fans, for those of you who are fake fans, Knicks is technically, is this right? Is that where Laura Kinney debuted in the X-Men comics? Or was the X-23 series first, then Knicks, then X-Men? I can't remember. Either way, coming out of, I think, the character's creation in X-Men Evolution, maybe? I could have my X-23 history way off here. Either way, Knicks is, it's a weird early 2000s Marvel Knights era book. Laura Kinney is in the book. I think she's working as a prostitute or like forced into sex work. Something that is attempting that early 2000s angle of signifying maturity without any of the creative competency to back it up. Let's just say it's not well regarded. I think from that synopsis, you might be able to understand why it's not super well regarded and is you know, a problem for that character. It's something they've moved away from for sure. Bringing back that title is a red flag. My guess, though, would be it's just New York X-Men. My guess would be they're going to rebrand Knicks as New York X-Men. And it's going to have nothing to do with the original series. Maybe Laura Kinney's in that book. That's probably the most continuity connection you get, is just Laura Kinney's in that book. I can't imagine it would be anything more than that. Okay, let's see. What are people saying here in the chat? A couple of people are asking, how does Era of Apocalypse play into this? Did we not talk about Era of Apocalypse? Oh, I suppose we didn't. Era of Apocalypse is coming out in, what, June? Is that how months work? Yeah, so after all the Krakoa stuff is done, Era of Apocalypse is coming out. It's going to be written by Steve Fox, who I like. Another one of my best friends in the industry. And it's going to be Apocalypse deciding who's going to be the next Apocalypse amongst 12 mutants, some of whom make a lot of sense, like Richter, who's clearly in line, like clearly is the eldest boy and should be selected here. And then some of them make no sense, I think, like Emma Frost and Mr. Sinister, which is just like, why are you even on The Bachelor if you're not here for the right reasons, right? I think that's a fair question to ask. But that's what Era of Apocalypse is. How does it tie in? I don't know, man. Like, it probably doesn't really. It sounds like a weird old little stopgap. It's going to move Apocalypse that we know somewhere else. It's going to have somebody else calling themselves Apocalypse. And somebody's going to pick that up and do something with it. Okay. I don't think it's going to be, like, super important. I think it's just a stopgap as they get ready for these new books. Justin M says, Nick's about to be the new Fallen Angels. How dare you? It's got that energy on naming alone, that's for sure. But hey, Hellions turned into like the best book of all time. So what do we know? Warren Wilson says, Dave Sinise should predict that she drops the name Wolverine because we're still back in the early 2000s. I mean, they've already done that with Laura. She's constantly getting retroactively rebranded. I mean, even going into Krakoa, they were trying to X-23 her again. So that's always the just have her be Wolverine. It's what everybody wants at this point. Come on. We already have a Wolverine. Shut up. Stop it. Move on. You have two. You're going to be fine. Xavier says, are they finally going to tell us how to pronounce Ech? Sorry. I tried a version of Apocalypse's name. I'm sure I got it wrong. I'm sure that's not right. Ian Feldman asks, will Central Park still be Seneca Gardens? I highly doubt it. I think anything that was in Krakoa is going to be gone. I thought maybe they'd keep a little more of the Krakoan world building and the things that we liked. Now I don't think they're going to keep anything. I think it's all gone. I do feel kind of bummed about that. I will not lie, especially about Araco. I think they're really working here to be like, we are going to take everyone off of Mars. We are not going to, like, there's not going to be Planet Araco anymore. What are they going to do with all these mutants? Throw them in a black hole? send him to a Shi'ar planet. They're going to move him somewhere else. I don't think they're going to deal with Irako anymore. And that bums me the hell out. I think what it signifies more than anything is tremendous work on world building, tremendous work on just like potential, on being additive, on new characters, on growing the thrill and the escape of reading Marvel Comics into something that it hadn't been before and not just recycling the same ideas. I think they're going to throw that all out. They're going to reference it. They're going to be like, you know, remember when? You know, I was actually thinking about this. So on My Marvel This Year, the podcast and reading club, where we go through the history of Marvel Comics from its origins to today, we just covered Planet Hulk. And Planet Hulk's great. Really holds up very well. Greg Pak's time on Hulk is you know, all-time Hulk stuff. This is 2006 we're on. And, you know, one thing, that was my first experience as a reader where you go through Planet Hulk, you go through World War Hulk, you go through the rest of that run, and then you get to the Jeff Loeb stuff, to the transition, to the Red Hulk. And that was the first time when I was reading something where it was like, they're not just gonna like move on, right? They're not just gonna like throw out the Hulk's anger at the Illuminati for shooting him into space and for losing this love and this sense of peace that he thought he had finally found. They're not just gonna like pretend that didn't happen, right? And they did. Like a little gradually, a little over time. And what you come to realize is that is how Marvel Comics renews itself. They shed the skin of anything that felt fresh, and they put back on the 60s suit, or whatever the sort of origination and kind of original feeling and vibe of a thing was, and they put that back on, and they wear that again for a while, until somebody is creative enough and artistic enough and daring enough and has just somehow the right mix of editors and vision and timing to try something new. And that is just what Marvel Comics does. DC too, in a lot of ways. That is what corporate superhero stuff is. And I think it always will be. You know? So my thing now, knowing that, is I can't pretend I didn't see it coming. I can't pretend I didn't know Krakoa would end in like a kind of disappointing way. But I think the big thing with it is to remind myself and to remind those around me to enjoy the hell out of the fresh stuff. Because the feeling I had today was like, listen, have I been critical of areas and elements of the Krakoan X-Men experience, certainly post-Hickman, probably in particular? Yeah, of course. I always wanted it to be the best version of what I thought it could be. And that's just how my brain works. But at the same time, the stuff that's been good has been really great. I've enjoyed it a lot. And what I was thinking today is you see it, you know, officially and formally ending and really kind of just getting thrown out and moved on from, in the way that we all should have come to expect, is like, appreciate that it happened. this is a little live, laugh, love, right? But it is with comics. It's like, just like Peach Momoko right now, starting an Ultimate X-Men run that feels unlike anything else Marvel's publishing. It feels so unique. I love that. Enjoy that. I need to enjoy that. I need to just let that be an experience that I can enjoy and have a good time with it, because like those moments are rare. It's hard to get that stuff. If it was easy to replicate, they'd do it all the time. It's not. It's super hard and it's rare, and it's often not what leads to dollars or what they think is marketable and will sell, and therefore it doesn't get a chance. Like the Krakoa era is good, man. Like it is. I know people like to complain about it. I know it's now rebranded as controversial, but it was a good time, you know, at the top. You could always go for the top and find good stuff. So, anyway, this isn't doom and gloom. This isn't, oh my gosh, it's ending. But it is like, it's like, oh, like they're, I think, like really doing a clean cut from Krakoa, you know? And it's gonna be its own thing. So that's X-Men From the Ashes. Again, keep your thoughts coming, keep your comments. I'll respond to what I can here. In the meantime, we got to take a sip from our sponsor deep into this stream without a single sip. All right, we are sponsored today by Quarter Full Water with a tiny Bruce Banner attached. A quarter full water is from the fridge, no ice, and we're going to see how it tastes. That tastes of need of a wash. That tastes of been sitting on the desk all day. Thank you, Quarter Full Water, for your sponsor, Big Water. As always, our sponsor. You know, I actually did on My Marvelous Year. I shouldn't be saying this, but so we got a sponsorship, or whatever, ads to run for Marvel Strike Force, which is a game that I've enjoyed a fair amount over time. But I can't get the rep to like get back to me with the proper contract. So I need you all to tell me, what are some Marvel Strike Force competitors? Because I now need to spitefully champion a different competitor because of this bad experience with the Strike Force rep, which I'm like, now I'm like free advertising Strike Force again. They got me again. But listen, I would love some recs for you. Who should I spitefully advertise for free in my sick and twisted way of getting back at this advertiser? Okay. Let's do this. We got a few more comics to talk about. Okay, we got one other thing to talk about before we talk about comics. Is Al Ewing jumping to DC? Al Ewing, currently writing The Immortal Thor, to talk about very briefly, has been writing every Marvel comic book under the sun for the past decade. Okay. It was reported, or shown, or whatever, by Oliver Sava. I saw this tweet that he's writing, Al will be writing a Blue Starman story in DC Pride. As far as I know, it's Al's first DC work. Is this a sign that Al is making the jump? He's going to be off X-Men. He's talked about a long, like, 50-issue, whatchamacallit, Immortal Thor run. So maybe he does both for a little while. It makes sense for Al to jump to DC. Al has written every Marvel book under the sun, every franchise, and has not ever been given the keys to Fantastic Four, to Avengers, to proper X-Men, I guess to Thor and Hulk, right? Not like he's got no shots here. Co-wrote an event, Empire. Didn't even get to singularly write an event. If I was Al, and he probably doesn't think this way at all, which is why he's a successful professional, I'd be offended that I'm not on Fall of the House of X. He should be one of the two writing the big end of the X-Men event. Okay? I don't know that that's how his brain works at all. Maybe he'll just be like, I just want to write where the opportunities are. It makes sense for Al to jump to DC. It does. Al Ewing's Green Lantern, Al Ewing's Legion of Superheroes, Al Ewing's Superman. All of these things sound like the most excited I'd be for DC Comics, like in years. I kind of hope it's happening. I do. It's a huge, like, I've been saying this for a long time, and obviously I'm a one-man Al Ewing propaganda machine, but like, if they lose Al at Marvel, then what? like what? What are you at that point? Without a Ewing, nonetheless, on just his own personal opportunities level, and as a fan, I would love to see Al Ewing go to DC. I think it'd be a good time for it. That said, like, I do want to see him finish Immortal Thor. So, I don't know. Can you do both? Maybe. Anyway, that's in the water. That's in the water right now. It is, again, all based on, he's writing a very short story in a DC Pride special, that might just mean he's writing the occasional small DC thing. Nonetheless, like, that could be an inroads to something larger down the line. I don't think that's, like, overly ridiculous to theorize. Xavier says, why would that be a problem? Yeah, I mean, it doesn't need to be. Well, it'd be a problem for Marvel in terms of if Val's not writing Marvel comics. That's what I mean. If he goes DC exclusive or just writing a lot less Marvel stuff. They're super reliant on him doing good stuff at Marvel. So I think if he went DC exclusive, like, that'd be a massive hole in their own lineup. And again, I think, you know, the thing you see with the From the Ashes lineup is, like, Marvel's very insular. Like, once you get in on sort of their, you know, once you're, like, part of their network of creatives, like, those are the names they kind of pick and choose from for all their projects. Like, no one in that From the Ashes announcement is sort of outside the typical last decade realm of Marvel creators and, like, internal resources, except for Gail Simone, and even she's done, like, some miniseries and stuff. There's not a name there that's like, oh, they haven't done Marvel before, or, oh, they're known for something else. They typically work from within. And if you're enjoying that, that's great. If you're not, it's kind of like, well, all those same names are getting recycled all over the place here, you know? So anyway, that's in the water. Let's talk about a couple comics while y'all getting some thoughts and questions. Black Panther, Ultimate Black Panther number 2, came out this week. We got Ron Khonshu, the Moon Knight, working against T'Challa and Wakanda. Brian Edward Hill's second issue. This feels the most standard of the Ultimate line. I'm still all in on the Ultimate line. Hill and Caselli are doing good work. They're moving at a nice clip. The best thing I can say about Ultimate Black Panther is it's moving at a nice clip. Going through the first issue, dropping as much as they did, getting through the second issue, having T'Challa end with that cliffhanger of like meeting Storm for the first time, right? Like, things are moving. Things are happening. That's good. I don't just want to sit around world council tables while T'Challa says, let's not do anything for, like, too long, you know? That said, it does read a lot like Ta-Nehisi Coates by way of Hickman, both in dialogue and approach, but also, like, this feels a lot like Black Panther the movie, you know? This feels a lot like a Black Panther that could almost be in 616. I want to see some big swings from the Ultimate Verse, and Black Panther isn't hitting that yet, you know? Again, solid work. If you just want a strong Black Panther and like, kind of capturing those MCU vibes while playing in the Maker's landscape that Hickman set up in the Ultimate Universe, you're going to get that. But, like, I want to see more. You know? I want to see it taking swings. It's especially weird when you got Hickman and Takeda getting all the attention on Spider-Man. And they're not that far removed from what's happening in Ultimate Black Panther, if we're real, but I think the idea of family Spider-Man feels more transformative to some readers than it does to others. Then you got Peach Momoko and Ultimate X-Men just going wild. Doing X-Men stuff stuff that you wouldn't even look at and be like, is this even an X-Men comic? Right? Got you asking those questions. Plus, visually, it doesn't look anything like anything else. Black Panther just feels like a comic. like if this comic had come out in 2006 in the actual original Ultimate Comics line, it kind of fits. The only thing that doesn't fit is Ron Khonshu working for the Maker, because that's stuff that was set up in Ultimate Invasion. Everything else, you could just be like, yeah, sure. This is a take on Black Panther. Give me something that isn't there anywhere else. That's what I'm looking for. A little disappointing. You know? I'm seeing here from Just, we need to learn more about the Moon Knights. Yeah, absolutely. How about they aren't just the twins from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul? How about we get a little Vision of the religion and where they're coming from and their history with the Maker and this council? That stuff's interesting. I want to see that. Haven't got any of that yet. Listen, we're 2 issues in. Samuel could be like, come on, patience. Yep, possibly. But again, I'm huge on like, listen, if you got story capital, spend it. You're not going to have forever. Okay? That's a lesson of the Krakoa era. So I want to see a little more from that. The other book that was interesting this week, Immortal Thor number 8. Okay. I've been trying to crack what Al Ewing is doing with Immortal Thor. Right? With Hulk, it was very easy. It's like, oh, okay, this is the horror Hulk, and we get all this crazy horror cosmology stuff. You know, the one below all, and it, you know, you could tap into like, oh, this is what this book is. With Thor, I think it's been trickier. The thing that seems the most consistent, and it's not something I would have noticed very easily, but it's like Ewing is retelling less heralded Thor stories, sometimes published by Marvel, sometimes just from Asgardian myth, but it's all kind of like almost going through the motions of Thor's history, of the tales, specifically set like in with the Utgards and stuff, which are kind of like the antagonists of this arc so far. And so it's like, okay, we're doing that. The question I have is why? And I think, you know, you saw, what was it, Tyrannos. It's the Utgard Thor. Comes in the first couple issues. And the thing he keeps saying is the wheel turns. And I kind of wonder if Al's digging into here this meta-commentary on the cyclical nature of superheroes and superhero stories. How they always kind of repeat themselves. How they always kind of pull from the past and then modernize. It's interesting because you got the Enchantress here working with Dario Agger of Roxxon, and they're like literally reading the old Thor stories as we're like simultaneously experiencing them slightly modernized. And I feel like there's maybe some cynical, interesting meta commentary on corporations owning these stories and recycling them. And like Al almost doing that as he's poking fun at it. I don't know. Maybe I'm off. There's something there. It's kind of interesting. And then you also, in this issue, have a pretty interesting deep cosmology that, Al Ewing's cosmology and Marvel cosmic landscape that he has patchworked together across, like, 74,000 different Marvel comics. Insane. Like, it is impossible to do what he has done, which is create, like, a consistent and thorough mapping of all of Marvel cosmology and like creation across 8 million different comics. That's wild. It's wild that he has done that and successfully at that. It's cool as hell. It's cool. But yeah, Immortal Thor, I mean, again, we're 8 issues in. It hasn't really revealed itself. It's teasing at it, but it hasn't made itself super clear. And I guess what I'm worried about is just like, I don't know, how long can you get away with that? How long can you get away with like feeling like there's something huge here to say, but kind of hiding it beneath the surface? I think it's a cool approach, but I have trust and confidence in the creator. I don't know. Like, this is the Thor book right now. There's not another Thor comic. If this was another creator that I didn't have the confidence in, I think you'd be looking at a pretty short Thor run. You know? So I don't know. I hope it's got rope because of the enjoyment of Immortal Thor, I guess, is my biggest fear. My other fear is what I saw shared by Comic Book Couples Counseling, which was the Immortal Thor paperback selling for a retail price of $30 for 5 issues and a little chapter of a free comic book day thing. That's insane. That is like prohibitive. I think at this point, I don't think Marvel gives a damn if you steal their comics, like piracy-wise. I don't think they care at all. They're just like, yeah, people are going to do that. We are just going to gouge the ever-living heck out of the nerds obsessed with collecting this stuff in print. I think that's the business strategy. It's just like, listen, there's all these nerds who are going to collect this stuff come hell or high water. We just need to charge them outlandish prices because they're going to do it no matter what. Is this how they talk about it? Probably not. But I'm increasingly getting that feeling. $30 for a paperback? What, can you get what, the first 3 volumes of Chainsaw Man for that? Get it for $6 if you just stream it on the Viz app. Come on. It's not competitive. It's not sane. What are we doing? What are we doing? All right. Another sip from the old water. Getting your questions, getting your thoughts. See what else we're going to talk about today. Let's see. Banksy says, how dare Ewing say this would be more epic than Immortal Hulk, though? It doesn't feel there yet. Yeah, I mean, it's if that's the bar, and it is, it's not there. Immortal Thor. Immortal Hulk, 8 issues in? That was a tight machine. Immortal Thor is definitely not there. I still kind of hope it can get there. Justin says, I do think Marvel fans need to kind of boycott some of these price hikes more. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, some will reject it. I don't know. It's just, it's the same thing it always, you know, with anything. It's like the people who can't afford that and are actually price conscious aren't going to get to have it. And the people who just have an insane amount of, you know, dough and just love collecting the stuff, or even don't have an insane amount, but are just like, this is what I do. I collect this stuff, you know, they're going to suck it up and they're going to get it. But yeah, I mean, that's, I don't know. I do want, it does, I don't know that much about the industry in terms of like the pricing of it and all that, but like, you know, it does make, like, is paper just like the most expensive thing right now? like obviously the pricing of like shipping and just everything is up, you know, inflation is a real thing. But it's like, is like, what is more expensive right now? Like a steak or a piece of paper? Because based on comics pricing, I think it's paper. Or it would, the irony too is like, it would imply that, well, it's not paper. You, what's the word? Snarky a-hole. How dare you call me that, by the way. It's not paper, but it's paying the creative talent, right? We have to pay our creators good money, which I'd be like, yes, you're right. That's fair. Except Marvel notoriously, famously, is not paying great rates right now. Like, they're famously not paying artists fantastic money. The best thing you can say about Marvel is, yes, they do in fact pay, which it turns out a number of smaller comics publishers have a hard time doing. You know? So it's like, oh boy. Oh boy. What are you going to do? Voss says, Immortal Hulk felt can't miss. Yeah, it did. We're not there. I don't know. What are the books right now that feel can't miss? I think Ultimate Spider-Man feels like I can't miss reading it. You know? Like, that's probably the Marvel book right now that I'm... Oh, and Ultimate X-Men. Those two, for me, are probably the two where I'm like, I would not miss a week of reading that issue. Rise of the Powers of 10, but I don't expect that, like, everyone is on that same wavelength. Okay. Final thoughts. Said I wasn't going to do it. Fall of the House of X, number 3, did come out this week. It is the third of 5 issues in the event that is, like, so desperately trying to kill this era. it is working so hard to make this era fall. I shared my thoughts last time on, at this point, it feels so rushed and just beneath everyone that it's hard to even, like, know where to lay the blame, you know? This issue is even worse, I think. Like, it's an atrocity of an event. What it does do is it makes me really appreciate what Kieran Gillen and Arby Silva are able to do in Rise of the Powers of 10. The fact that they're able to pull an ending together here that is even semi-satisfactory for the Krakoa era, it's amazing. I don't know how they're doing it. It feels like, listen... I may have said this last time. I don't know. Jordan D. White got... Did he get booted off the X-Books? He got relocated. Okay. After the Krakoa era, they're bringing Tom Brevoort in. That's not a vote of confidence. And to me, it feels like an editor who's like, yeah, okay, you're kicking me off this. I'm in my 2 weeks notice phase. I'm taking it easy. You know, we're in the home stretch now. did a lot of heavy lifting, keeping this thing going, keeping this thing tight in the early days. I'm on my 2 weeks notice now. Listen, I'll help those around me. We'll get these comics out on time. But like, whatever goes wrong, it ain't my problem anymore. It's got such that energy with these books. I actually would say Fall of the House of X is probably the most disappointing book of this entire era because of the legacy it's like making a play at tapping into, and because of what it should be as a conclusion of this era. You know, like, I mean, this is, I read all of Fallen Angels. I technically finished X-Core. I'm not even reading Fall of the House of X. Like, I'm scanning it and just like in awe and disgust. It's like a combination of just like, it's not even the car crash thing. It's not even like, oh, this is so bad. It's sort of just like, how did this happen? How did we get here? I tweeted this week, everyone, like Duggan should be leaking, his people should be leaking the hell out of stories about like just everyone else's, like corporate's role in this. Like if I was Duggan, I'd be like on serious damage control. I'd be phoning Bleeding Cool daily, being like, have I got a scoop for you? Here's what they're making us do on X-Men to end the Krakoa era. Because like otherwise it looks like for these creators, I mean, like it's a nightmare. Like your worst work is this event that is supposed to be like a big deal that is calling back the House of X. You know, this is everyone involved's worst work. Forget how you felt about or how you think I felt about Duggan's X-Men prior to this point. This is everyone's worst work. I mean, oof. Oof. It's a slap in the face. It really is. I don't know. I don't think you can find a more disappointing page or comic than Fall of the House of X in this Krakoa era, which like I would not have wanted. I'd rather it didn't end with the singularly most disappointing thing. Like, come on. That would have been fine with that being in the middle. I see Justin says, Fall is Duggan's one more day. See, that's the thing is like, it's not going to be like memorably bad. It's not going to be like memorably impactful because it's not going to have any impact. It's like a press release that's saying we're moving on now. Here's the next era. You know, it's not going to have any sort of memorable legacy or controversy or fan conversation. Because I think it feels like everyone's sort of just the same level of like, well, they checked out, so I guess I'm checked out too. It's like watching your team give up after halftime. No, not halftime, in the fourth quarter. It's like, well, they gave up. I guess we're going home early. We might as well beat traffic. That's Fall of the House of X is the beat traffic of comics. I don't even know who's working on this comic at this point. I think, you know how in Krakoa, in Resurrection, you have like a husk? You have like a human husk before Professor X puts your brain back in, puts your psyche back in. That's who's writing Fall of the House of X. It's not even, I can't even blame Duggan. It's just a Duggan husk. I don't like the Duggan husk's writing. I'll criticize the Duggan husk. All right. Anyway. All right. There we go. I did it. We talked about it for 2 seconds. Okay. That's all. That's it. That's all I got to say. Remember when Aaliyah Gregor was interesting? Aaliyah, named for Paul's sister, in Dune. Memories of all the prescient reverend mothers. Find that in the Duneverse X-Men video over on Comic Book Herald. What a YouTube channel, right? Great work. Okay, any final questions, any final thoughts? We'll wrap it up right here. What is all this woofer conversation? I'm confused as hell. What are y'all talking about? What is this? Is this some sort of inside joke? I'm not in on you can't have jokes about me on my stream. I'll be insecure all night long. All night he was insecure American. Young Americans. Oh, King Kia says Fall of X feels like point shaving. They definitely bet the under on Krakoa love. That's good. That's well said. Fresh News says, if you told me the one story that hooked me in Hoxpox with Nimrod and all that ended with one cheap piss-weak moment, I wouldn't have kept up with this book. I still don't get the Moira heel turn so weak. Well, that's old news, Fresh News. We're not even talking Moira these days, unless we're talking a Rise Week. Oh, Woofer's the new mutant from Chicago. I see. Okay, there was a new mutant introduced. I take it back. There was one great part of Fall of the House of X. There was a new mutant named Woofer. He flew the W at Apocalypse. Remember? Remember in X-Men number 7 when people were like, hey, what does Apocalypse do? Oh, yeah, he kills kids in an arena and makes them fight him with a sword so they can be reborn as their best selves. That's a scary-ass dude. Now we got woofers on Mars flying W's at the guy. Come on. Have some self-respect. I do love Woofer, my favorite mutant, probably in the entire. I hope he's an exceptional X-Men with a flippin' X. Come on, Marvel. All right, we did it. We talked about a whole new announcement. Had a few comics to talk about today. That's pretty good. I don't know. I didn't get a vibe in here. Are people excited? But from the ashes? Maybe I'm just not paying attention. Where are we at? What's the pulse? What's good, kids? I'm just looking up now next week. What do we got coming out? Oh, dear. Invincible Iron Man, no. Resurrection Magneto, number 3. X-Men Forever, number 1. Okay, we'll be here next week. That's two we can talk about. Beneath the Trees, Where Nobody Sees, that's number 4 on the list. Okay. It feels a little late in the day for me to do the best comics of last month, although at some point it's going to be old. All right, fine, we'll do a real quick scan. Let's see, what are people saying in the chat? Justin says, depressed about Ashes. Baku Blade says, meh. Ois Z says, what is this? Michael says, sad but buying all the books. See, that's what I'm talking about. That's some X-Men fandom. I can appreciate and respect that while being completely baffled. But I appreciate that you're honest about it. JJ says, you know what's good? Raiders Free Agency. What, we got a Raiders fan in the chat? Does that mean we got somebody from Vegas? I got some bets for you to place for me. Is that still a thing that you need to do? Probably not. James says, not excited at all. So far we got no "this sounds awesomes" from the chat. That's fine. I'm definitely going to check out all these first issues. I can't pretend I'm that level of cool. I'm not so cool. I'm going to be like, not even touching this. Boycotting the line until they bring Krakoa back. That's not happening. Listen, if this Jeb McKay X-Men book turns out to be awesome, we can't sit here and be surprised. It could be awesome. Easily. Jeb McKay's pretty good at what he does. Clea was good. I didn't even mention Clea, Doctor Strange. Makes some stuff work. Hasn't made Avengers work. I feel like X-Men might be different. JJ says, Dolphins fan. What are you talking about Raiders Free Agency if you're a Dolphins fan? Confusing. Confounding individual. My favorite graphic novels of February 2024. Quick scan. This is live on Comic Herald if you want to check it out there. I also email these out every month. Working on the March one right now. Chainsaw Man, Volume 14, by Tatsuki Fujimoto. Man, there's not a single chainsaw in this book. Can you imagine if an Uncanny X-Men by Gail Simone and David Marquez, first issue comes out, not a single mutant? That's kind of what Peach Momoko's Ultimate X-Men feels like, actually. I take it back. You can probably totally imagine that. That's basically what happened. Chainsaw Man, every volume, I'm reading it. Fascinated by everything that goes on there. Amulet, Book 9, the final book, Wave Rider. This is one of my all-ages faves. Kazu Kibuyoshi, another best friend of mine. I have so many best friends. If you've read Amulet, good for you. You're with me. If you have a kid age, I'm going to say like 8 to 12, and you're trying to get them into comics, I feel like take a swing on Amulet. Great stuff. Good, great look, even if you just appreciate art, man. Bad Medicine. This is one I picked up at the library on a whim. Love picking up comics on a whim at the library. Christopher Twin's Bad Medicine. It's a series of short stories that are like horror mixed in with the social and just sort of like personal issues of the Cree indigenous tribe in Canada. Really good work. Really good work. This one's underrated. If you're into like, hey, I want to check out a comic that I bet is like off everybody's radar, check Bad Medicine. Curses by Kevin Huizinga. I said that wrong for sure. Apologies, Kevin. Curses is a reprint. This is short stories that came out in the early 2000s. This is drawn in quarterly work. I read Glenn Ganges' The River at Night last year, and it is straight up one of my favorite comics of all time. I moved it into the top 50 best comics of all time. Curses is pre The River at Night. Series of short stories, but it's really just, man, that's a cartoonist who does some fascinating work. Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees. This one does not have a collection out yet, but I had to include it. Patrick Horvath, Hassan Otsmin Elhow, doing one of the best ongoing books right now. If you like Dexter and you also liked the Berenstain Bears, you're going to want to read this. Okay. This book has it, has what I call the juice. This is a good one. This is going to be on a lot of best of 2024 lists. Guarantee it. Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees. That's out from IDW. The Night Eaters, book two by Marjorie Liu and Sonia Takeda. I'm seeing Pepto-Bismol says open in Hoopla now. Yeah, you'll find a bunch of these there. You'll find a bunch of these there. The Night Eaters, book two. Marjorie Liu and Sonia Takeda, up there for me with like Brubaker Phillips in terms of creative collaborations that I just love and trust. The Night Eater. I was out on book one. It just didn't connect. And then I read book two and I was like, what was I thinking? What a fool I've been. Again, The Night Eater's book two is awesome. Her Little Reapers, highly recommend it. My favorite book of the month and maybe of the year, Mary Tyler Moorhawk by Dave Baker. If you, like me, were an English major, if you, like me, like David Foster Wallace's Infinite Jest, or at least read it so you could say you liked it in intelligent conversation. If you liked Mark Z. Danielewski's House of Leaves, which I read last year, 2 years ago, for the first time. If you're a literary nerd, Mary Tyler Moorhawk, baby. Oh, it's so good. So good. Combination of comics and prose journalism, of future societies, and the power of creativity, the influence of corporations on creativity. I tell you what, Mary Tyler Moorhawk blew my hair off. I used to have a full head of hair, and then I read Dave Baker's Mary Tyler Moorhawk, and it is gone. All gone. This is the comic, okay? This is without question. Listen, unless this year just is sick, this is going to be in my top five of the year. Probably it's going to be my favorite. And then I'll obviously hear some others I read as well. That's going to do it. All right. I'm glad we got through that. I got to tell you, I love doing these monthly best of lists with the collected editions and graphic novels. It's keeping me super engaged in comics. It's got me, look at this. I've got it under my mic right now, but I'm out here buying weirdo French Masters of the Nefarious. It's released in French. Now it's in English. I didn't even like this that much, but I'm out here reading French underground comics. That's where I'm at. Okay? Oh, it's so fun. I love comics. Comics are great. Thanks for listening, everybody. And as always, enjoy the comics.